morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com, and he'll take them at the end of the call. Today we have Chief Investment Officer John Portwood, Investment Director Greg Halewski, Investment Director David Lundgren, Investment Director Luther McDougall, and Investment Director Jeff Changis. The moderator for the call will be David Lundgren.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of our monthly economic update call. John, let's go ahead and start with a discussion about the economy. I noticed a headline yesterday that talked about a synchronized global expansion, which sounds very exciting. We found out during the month that third quarter GDP, it's estimated on a quarter-over-quarter basis, came in at 2.8%, quite a bit higher than anticipated, so I guess some more good news. So if you could talk a little bit about the economy in general and you know, what impact are international markets having on the U.S. economy? Because it seems to be, you know, we went through this period of time where the Eurozone was in recession for an extended period of time. We're finally starting to see some improvement there. How is that impacting us here in the U.S.?
Let me start first with a brief discussion of where we are, where the U.S. economy is at the present time. We've obviously been in a recovery for about 4 years. The recovery has been anemic by historical standards, as we all know. We've talked about it a lot, roughly 2% or so. Dave mentioned that the last quarter, the third quarter, was a pretty good quarter, 2.78% based on the initial estimate. It was kind of a mixed bag in the sense that only 1% of it was due to buildup in inventories, which, you know, historically has not led to, the next quarter being perhaps as good as the quarter that we just had. So fourth quarter estimates are a little bit lower on average than what we experienced in the third quarter. So consumer spending was sort of okay. You know, everything is sort of trending roughly the way it has in the past, and the leading indicators are still positive. The coincident indicators that we follow still look like we're, you know, tracking pretty much along the same path that we've been on for quite some time. You know, I think the Federal Reserve has, in their research department, has come up with like a potential growth rate for the economy now, something below 3%. They're thinking that, you know, might be more realistic than thinking we'll get back to a 3% growth rate. But at least it looks like we're probably okay, and we're not in danger of recession. When you look overseas, the picture is a little better than it was, you know, say 4 or 5 months ago. As Dave mentioned, Europe no longer appears to be exactly in recession, but the numbers we see basically just are just a tick above recession, I suppose. And you know, the outlook is relatively muted, but at least it doesn't look like we've got a lot of excessive bleeding going on in Europe. But it is kind of a mixed bag overseas. China is slowing. Like the last report out of China was about 7.5% GDP growth, which is relatively low for China, looking at the last 15 or 20 years, and some folks are suggesting that China may be on the verge of slowing down to 4 or 5% as the, you know, the real impact of their real estate bubble over there begins to make a difference. But again, overall, it looks like, you know, we're still in a global expansion of some sort, even though, excuse me, the results are somewhat mixed. You've got some good news some places in the world and not so good news in others. The IMF has lowered their estimate for GDP growth 3 years in a row, and they've done that recently in their estimates going forward, but the estimates are still, you know, are still positive. So that suggests that we're probably going to at least, you know, continue to muddle through, even if we don't get a great deal of acceleration going into next year. One of the things that is bothering the economists now is whether or not as I mentioned earlier, the growth rates that we've seen since the crash represent a level of economic activity that perhaps won't change very much for a long time to come. And, you know, we've written about and talked about people who have examined growth historically and look forward to what might happen given the environment we're in and come to the conclusion that perhaps, you know, we are in a 2% growth world rather than 3% for perhaps quite some time. And since inflation is falling around the world and since, while we've had some pickup in economic activity, it hasn't been very great, economists are beginning to revisit the idea of slower growth for a very long time. And Larry Summers, who was once considered the front runner as for chairman of the Federal Reserve Board after Bernanke steps down, made a speech at an IMF conference recently that caused a stir, and he asked these questions. One question he asked, you know, sort of rhetorically, you know, it's something that the economists probably needed to dwell on and think about more, was, you know, are we in a relatively stagnant period of economic growth? And what we have seen and what we're seeing now is maybe as good as it gets. And the second question he asked, which everybody, you know, got somewhat worked up over, was, do we have to create asset bubbles to keep the economy going? Well, obviously, this has been a big topic of conversation in the economic world for the last few weeks. But again, it's not that this hasn't been discussed earlier. So, you know, I guess if we all had our druthers, we'd prefer a muddle-through economic environment until some of the excesses that still exist and the debt levels, you know, are worked out, you know, rather than experience, as Martin Wolf wrote in the Financial Times recently, following Larry Summers' speech, crash, bubble, crash. So, you know, hopefully we're not going to experience that going forward, but we've had so far this century two bubbles and two crashes. And it may be that the Fed, in some of their internal conversations about tapering or not tapering, are beginning to wonder how far they can go, you know, with QE before they do create some, you know, problems that we'd rather not see. But so the issue has sort of shifted in the economic world, it seems to me now, more toward what's going to happen in the long term rather than necessarily what's going to happen in the immediate term, because it looks like we probably, you know, reached the point where it's likely not to get any worse, you know, unless something significant happens. And but of course, we still have the sovereign debt issue in Europe. Nobody really believes, based on the research I've seen, that Europe will survive in its present form, you know, that one or more of those countries are going to have to go off on their own probably, unless they come up with a political solution, a more, you know, cohesive political union of some sort, or a financial, you know, union that makes more sense than what currently exists. So, but anyway, that's sort of what it looks like. It looks like we're sort of okay economically, and we're making some progress, but the concern is, you know, how much growth do we get, and, you know, do we have a situation that, you know, where asset values get, you know, completely divorced from economic reality?
Okay. And I think you know, a lot of your comments were focused on long term, and you did touch on the short term, intermediate, but maybe just for a little bit more clarification, you know, any thoughts or comments on fourth quarter that we're in currently and two-thirds of the way through, and then expectations on, you know, say the first half of 2014, is it more of this kind of 2%, 3% environment that we're in now?
The latest estimates I've seen for this quarter range from a low of 1.3 to maybe 2.5, so it's a pretty wide range. And as I think all of us are aware, it's extremely difficult for anybody to pinpoint exactly where GDP is going to be from one quarter to the next. But, you know, most of the indicators seem to have downshifted a bit along with, you know, relatively sluggish consumer spending and the fact that capital spending by businesses is not picking up very much. And also we're seeing a slowdown in the growth of loan demand in this country. That the last 4 or 5 months, loan demand is still positive, but the growth rate has been shrinking. And something I didn't mention earlier about Europe, why it's so difficult for Europe to really make a lot of progress. Credit demand in Europe and in lending by banks is actually 2% lower than it was last year, and is actually, if the numbers are correct, lower than it was in 2009. So, you know, there's very little credit being created in Europe, and that's probably one thing that's holding them back. The other thing, going forward into next year, you know, what makes it seem that we're probably still in that, 2% plus or minus economic world, I suppose, in the U.S., is the growth in regulations. EPA is reported to be coming out with something like 150 regulations that might even include giving the government the ability to regulate the pond in your backyard, according to what I've read. And that might be an extreme thought, but certainly, more regulations as far as business is concerned are coming out next year. We've also got the disastrous rollout of Obamacare that is likely not to get a great deal better early next year.
Let's talk about that a little bit. If you think about it, during the month, that was one of the big news items, was the implementation of Obamacare and some of the issues related to that. And let's take the political aspect out of the equation and focus more on economic and market impact. Is that as we move forward towards full implementation, give us your thoughts on what the market impact could be, if any.
From an economic standpoint, it's probably going to be a drain of sorts, but it might be difficult to really quantify it. There are more taxes to come in 2014 relative to the initial affordable health care law, and you have the confusion concerning the who has access and how they get it and so forth, and how the insurance plans work. But in any case, insurance premiums are going up, deductibles are probably doubling for just about everybody in the system, whether you have insurance through a company or have your own personal insurance. The cost is going up, so to the extent that reduces the propensity of consumers to spend, I suppose, that's probably going to be a negative. And then you look at the National Federation of Independent Business, their surveys have dropped recently, not only because, the small business doesn't really see an appreciable pickup in their sales, but simply because they are, trying to factor in how much more it's going to cost them next year, to offer health plans or what they're going to do with it and so forth and so on. So, that's probably, not going to be a positive. It's just hard to figure out exactly, how it's going to work. But I would guess, first part of next year, unless something really unusual happens, you're probably still looking at, roughly where we are today, something that's positive, but not necessarily significantly positive at this point.
Okay. Thank you, John. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Another month, another 3% for the S&P 500. It's been an amazing year. Just to share some statistics with our listeners. For the month, the S&P 500 was up 3%. We're closing in on 30% year to date. Just an amazing year. 29% to be more precise, and I guess a lot of market indices crossed some thresholds of note. The NASDAQ crossed 4,000 for the first time, I think, in 13 years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average above 16,000, and the S&P crossed 1,800. And just to kind of put that 1,800 in perspective, I was looking at it this morning. 5 years ago, the S&P 500 was about 800, and of course, 5 years ago we were kind of right in the midst of the market downturn. But I mean, it's just been an amazing run, and I know it seems like a broken record. We keep talking about this every month. Will it? Can it continue? So far this year, it has. What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you for stealing my first paragraph.
Ah, sorry.
No, you're right. It was up 3% for the month, and if you go back to last month's call, I threw out that statistic that if the market's up over, I think it was 20% through October, that generally you had an 80% chance that November, December would be strong. And so far, November has proved that statistic true. So, December remains to be seen what happens in December. Since March of 2009, actually, the S&P, if you look at that percentage rise, it's up 171% just cumulatively. And, you know, it goes back to what we've been talking about quite a bit on these calls is the QE or quantitative easing. Obviously, with interest rates being pushed down to zero and not having the desired effect of stimulating the economy, the Fed had resorted to alternative means and, you know, essentially, again, it's a euphemism for kind of printing money. And right now we've got a bond buying program, you know, pumping, basically buying bonds out in the public and pumping billions of dollars into the economy, hopefully to stimulate. But if you look at charts, look at the Fed's balance sheet, for example, relative to GDP growth, or it doesn't seem to be having any effect whatsoever. That would be the direct stimulus route, and it doesn't seem to work. Now, perhaps the Fed is a little bit more subtle in their strategy, and that, and we've said it before on these calls, that, you know, a lot of that money doesn't seem to be being put into capital investment, but it seems to be finding its way into the stock market. And perhaps that's the goal of the Fed, is that they want to create a wealth effect. I forget the statistic, but I think, you know, over 50% of the population is invested in stocks in one way or another through retirement plans, pension plans. And obviously, if stocks are going up, people feel better. They feel like they're wealthier and they're more inclined to spend. So if that's the case, if that's really truly their goal, is to instill confidence in the consumer. And again, consumption in the economy roughly is 70% of gross domestic product. You know, perhaps it's just taking longer for that money or to people kind of open up their wallets bigger, but it's certainly making people feel wealthier. So, you know, when that desired effect happens, just as an anecdotal, I did go out on Black Friday and, you know, took a look around, and there seemed to be no shortage of people shopping. I know the newspapers and the media are reporting that foot traffic was less, but I think the entire shopping process is a lot different these days with all the online retailers. It's much more convenient, and certainly that's the way I shop. So I think all in all, once we see what the combined actual brick store sales plus online sales is, I'm guessing that the retail and the Christmas retail season is not going to be so bad after all. Last couple of years, we've had a lot of gloom and doom saying, oh, Christmas is canceled, but I'm pretty positive on it. That said, going forward, just looking ahead again, there was a big article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal on incoming Fed Chairman Janet Yellen, and the title of the article was Dovish Yellen Keeps Gloom at Bay. And I touched on that last call, saying that she's even more accommodative in terms of QE or pumping more dollars into the economy than Bernanke is. And so, you know, if you believe the hypothesis that those dollars are finding their way into the stock market, certainly she's going to be more accommodative. I don't think they're going to do anything prior to her getting into office in terms of cutting tapering. I just would find that very hard to believe. I think they'll leave that to her. But from what I read, she's very reluctant to really cut back. And I think right now the Fed is in a tremendous dilemma, and they're trying to figure out the strategy of how to implement that tapering without disrupting the markets and unraveling everything that they, you know, tried to achieve. So, again, I think that could certainly provide fuel for the market. Given that, though, we've had such a strong rise in stocks, you know, we can't help but feel that there's got to be some kind of a pullback coming, you know, easily a 10% correction it wouldn't probably be necessarily a long-term correction unless there was some other catalyst alongside it. But, you know, it just seems like a pullback would be a healthy thing to have. As far as earnings growth, I think I reported that the third quarter earnings came in at about a 3.5% growth rate year over year, and it's dropped slightly, but it's right there. So, again, not tremendously strong, but strong enough where, you know, we'd like to see that continue to go. The big issue, again, is that the market keeps going up. We don't get the earnings. P.E. multiples continue to climb. That's when we start to get into bubble territory and things, we start to get a little more worried. But right now, it's hang tight.
Thank you, Greg.
Sure.
Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
You heard Greg's comments on the Fed and Janet Yellen and what impact or effect it's had on stocks. Couple things. Talk a little bit about effect or impact on the bond market and just maybe a little bit more detail on what you think the Fed's going to be looking to do going forward.
Great. Well, just to bring everybody up to date, the details of the transition from Bernanke to Yellen, because I myself sometimes get a little fuzzy on all the dates. Bernanke's term officially ends on January 31st. So that's the transition date that everybody is aiming for. Of course, Janet Yellen has been going through all the confirmation committees and has given all the correct answers, as Greg pointed out. I think the message that was trying to be communicated is steady as she goes. You know, she sounds like she had never met a QE that she didn't like. But at the same time, we get mixed signals because when we read some of the older Fed minutes that have been released, there is increasing talk again about that a taper of some sort has to take place. So there are basically three meetings that remain. Well, not three meetings, but there are a series of meetings that in the near future that are possible taper dates that people are focused on. One is the middle of this month. Pretty much everybody has ruled out any sort of action. We've got one at the end of a Fed meeting at the end of January, and then a mid-March Fed meeting, which is more or less what the market now, what the probability is for some sort of beginning of a tapering move. And that'll obviously come after confirmation and Janet Yellen takes over. It's likely to be quite modest. And it's certainly not a guarantee that the taper will begin, but the taper itself in all of the, as is evidenced today here in this call, there's just so much focus that gets generated by the Fed's action and the tapering, it becomes somewhat distracting in itself. So personally, I think that they're going to have to begin. The market seems to be indicating that. We've seen a rise in rates kind of back to the middle of the trading range between 2.5% and 3% on the 10-year. So the market is sort of anticipating some sort of action. But, again, all of this really is just the beginning of the removal of some of the stimulus and is, in fact, a tightening of sorts. Expected to really affect just longer-term rates. Short-term overnight rates are not being impacted by this at this point. It still looks like in all probability we're talking the middle of 2015 before the Fed really starts raising short-term interest rates. But as Greg also mentioned, what the Fed is really trying to navigate here is some sort of a smooth transition from the stimulus programs that they're in now to something back to a more normal program. They want to try to avoid a big sudden jump in rates that they precipitated last time. So that's the challenge that Janet Yellen will have in front of her when she ultimately takes over the reins at the end of January. The one other quick comment on Janet Yellen that I think is important is that in addition to all the taper talk that surrounds this, her nomination and assuming the role as chairman is really pretty important because she's going to be overseeing one of the basically the the biggest overhaul of financial regulation since the 1930s with the Dodd-Frank law. The Fed is playing a big role in trying to somehow improve bank too big to fail, the too big to fail situation that we faced back in 2008. Ironically, though, and I haven't verified these numbers, but I think they're probably, this is probably pretty close to accurate if it's not spot on, and that is the top five banks are actually about 30% bigger now than they were before 2008. So the whole impetus of eliminating too big to fail has not actually happened in the post-2008 era. So Janet Yellen will be in charge if she can't eliminate a too big to fail institution, certainly shoring them up from a capital standpoint. And that's going to be one of the key roles that she's going to play in the coming years as she takes over the role of the Fed. So this is a momentous time in terms of the Federal Reserve, and we'll just have to stay tuned to see who the real Janet Yellen is after she takes over.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Luther, you heard Jeff's comments on the bond markets and interest rates. And obviously, we've spent a lot of time talking about the Federal Reserve and their actions. Any other important aspects of the fixed income markets worth noting? The taper talk?
Yeah, well, you know, Jeff and Greg and even John have kind of hinted at what's been happening. And we know from past experience when the Fed first started talking about tapering, it spooked the bond market somewhat. We were at about a 220 on the 10-year the day they announced that they were going to contemplate slowing their bond purchases, and we ended up at a rate of about 3%. So that first initial conversation drove interest rates up about 80 basis points or 0.75%. And we've kind of fallen off a little bit since then, but we're still around the 275 range. And as Jeff mentioned, it doesn't look like the Fed's going to do anything with short-term rates anytime soon, maybe not until 2015. And I would hesitate to guess that during the course of next year, we'll probably stay in a range of around 2.5% to 3% on the 10-year. But that's very, very data-dependent. We probably won't get much more when the Fed does begin to taper other than an initial knee-jerk kind of reaction. But if the economy is any stronger than most forecast, then we could see rates move up a little bit higher and steepening the yield curve. But for now, assuming all things remain stable and the government can get its act together, it looks like we'll stay kind of in the range where we are now with the 10-year Treasury at about 2.75% going forward throughout most of next year.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. It looks like we're right at 9:30, and don't have any questions that have been emailed in. So we'll end the call here and look forward to everybody joining us in January. Thank you.